For God's sake, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the deaths of kings, how some have been deposed, some slain in war.
Ay me, I see the ruin of my house. The tiger now hath seized the gentle hind. Insulting tyranny begins to jut upon the innocent and aweless throne.
What is a man? Sure he made us with such large discourse, looking before and after, gave us not that capability and godlike reason to fust in us unused.
O my dear father, restoration hang thy medicine on my lips, and let this kiss repair those violent harms that my two sisters have in thy reverence made.
I am a king that find thee, and I know 'tis not the balm, the sceptre and the ball, the sword, the mace, the crown imperial, the throne he sits on, nor the pomp that beats on the high shore of the world.
This is the mighty history of the British Empire, a people living on a tiny island in the North Atlantic Ocean. Built an empire that circled the earth and brought freedom and education to languishing millions. This empire was blessed by Almighty God and one of his best educated teachers, William Shakespeare. Shakespeare has educated some of the greatest leaders of all time, such as Abraham Lincoln and Winston Churchill.
We shall never surrender.
Our troubled world needs a fresh crew of nation-building leaders. Are you ready to step up to the challenge? Welcome to the exciting classroom of Shakespeare's Royal Education with host Dennis Leap.
Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome back to Shakespeare's Royal Education. Now, on our premiere podcast, I showed you how William Shakespeare has been banned in today's high schools by teachers, by college administrators. That they've been it's been banned in colleges. Reading William Shakespeare's plays is no longer considered a requirement for literature majors at America's top universities. Now, in 2015... the Chicago Sun-Times reported that only 4 out of 52 universities and liberal arts colleges ranked highest by the U.S. News & World Report no longer required their English majors to take a class delving into Shakespeare's plays. Now, that is amazing. And again, remember now, those articles from 2015. Now, I do have the article here in front of me, and I wanted to read you the very first quote from the article. And guess who wrote the quote? The Bard. Shakespeare wrote this. It says, "Ignorance is the curse of God. Knowledge is the wing wherewith we fly to heaven." And William Shakespeare wrote that in Henry V, Part 2. Now, I think educators should agree with that. But many, many educators do not agree with that. And so it's really sad. And again, 52 universities, only out of 52 universities, only 4 require English majors to read Shakespeare's plays. Now, I went to the University of Pittsburgh, and I was an English major, and we were required. And, of course, here at Herbert W. Armstrong College, our sophomores are required. And so it's really kind of tragic what's going out there. But listen to what they've replaced Shakespeare with. And this is the Sun-Times article continues. Instead, some schools offer courses on vampires, cyborgs, and popular films and TV shows to fulfill English major study requirements. Can you believe that? You can't study the Bard. You can't study William Shakespeare because he's a dead, racist, white guy. But you can read all you can, you know, books, anything you can on vampires, cyborgs, and popular films. So it's just unbelievable. Now, let me give you the list. This is in 2015. Now, this could have changed by then. But the 4 universities that require a course dedicated to Shakespeare were Harvard University. I'm happy for Harvard. Wesley College, the United States Naval Academy, and the University of California at Berkeley. Those are the only four American universities that require to read Shakespeare for an English major. Now, that's really sad. All right. Why should students study Shakespeare? Is it just to educate them on, you know, learning English? Is it just to indicate them on Shakespeare? And the answer is no. One of the author of this article quotes another professional. His name was Polakoff. And here's what he said. Polakoff said that the council encourages all college students to study Shakespeare because the tough work involved in such a class can help prepare them for any job, including today's highly sought-after engineering, data analytics, and app and web development work. And so there's a guy that makes sense. And it is hard to read and study Shakespeare. And it's hard to teach Shakespeare. But the more I do it, the more I learn, and I think the better I become at the job. And so if you look at education today, and you can see that people are just lazy. They don't want to have to work hard. They want to get a degree and get out there and not do the hard work. And the thing is, you know, I think here at Herbert W. Armstrong, we do have, you know, a tough curriculum. But we also know that our students that graduate, and when they go out to find a job, there are people, especially here in Edmond, there are companies here in Edmond that seek after our students because they know how to work hard, they know how to communicate, and they do what they're told. They do what they're asked to perform, and there's no questions about it. And so I think Shakespeare certainly has, you know, a lot to do with that. Their education, and it's helping them to actually get jobs. Now, for today's podcast, what I want to do is I want to continue with Mr. Gerald Flory's article that we started last time, and it's titled "Shakespeare and the British Empire." Now, it's interesting. I just looked this up today. This article was featured in our Royal Vision magazine in 2017. And to me, it is amazing that this article was published right in the middle of all this controversy. This was going on in 2015. And, of course, it's still going on today. And as I read to you at the last podcast, more people are just being honest, you know, why they don't want Shakespeare. And it's not just because of education. It's because they're really hung up on this whole idea. There's this endemic racism in white people. And so it's really sad. Now, I'm just going to continue with this article from Mr. Flory. It's quite an extensive article. And I think if you go to pcg.church, you can still, you know, download this article for yourself. One of the things that Mr. Flory really points out in the second half of this article, and I'm just going to read a lot from this again today. It says, "Shakespeare wasn't just for those in the early British Empire. He has something to teach us today. He knew how to think deeply." And how many people today know how to think deeply? And, not many. And I'd have to say, if you look at our leadership today, they're shallow and very selfish in their thinking. And look at the destruction that's happening in America and around the world. And there's even more we can talk about with that. But, so many of us just don't know how to think deeply. Now, the point is, and I think this is one of our underlying principles here at the college, and Mr. Flory does say it. He says, God wants us to learn how to think deeply. And he certainly does. Even the Bible it has its challenges when you're reading it and studying it. But the more you dig into it, the more you can understand. And of course, certainly God gives us that understanding. He says, God isn't going to force education on us, but he wants us to think deeply so we will see if we are childlike and use logic that God's truth is right. And so the whole point is, if you can't think deeply, you can't come to a knowledge of the truth, whether it's secular truth or whether it's physical, I mean, spiritual truth. Mr. Flory goes on to say, the failure to think deeply plagues all of us. It plagued Shakespeare as well, and he had to work hard to develop his mind. And if you remember last time, we talked about perfection and how he strove for perfection. And certainly thinking deeply helped him to come to the perfection that he had. Mr. Foy goes on talking about Shakespeare, said God didn't just hand his ability to him. He made him work like he makes you work. If you want to be great, even intellectually, you must work at it. God makes you sweat and struggle. Yes, he will help you succeed, and he will put all kinds of opportunities before you, but he requires you to work. And, I've known Mr. Fleury since I was 23, and, I've lived under that principle, and I have benefited greatly from that principle. You know, if you're going to succeed in anything, you know, you have to work at it. Mr. Fleury goes on to say, as the 19th century English poet Algernon Charles Swinburne noted, it is not only the crowning glory of England, it is the crowning glory of mankind that such a man should ever have been born as William Shakespeare. Now, that's from his introduction to the comedies of Shakespeare. He says, Mr. Fleury now says, I don't want to oversell Shakespeare, but we can learn a lot from carnal-minded people who dedicate their lives to perfection in their field. Johnson said Shakespeare left the world such creations of language as had never before and perhaps never would again come from one human mind. And Mr. Fleury goes on to say, look, we can learn from people like that. And, how much are you still educating yourself? Education should not end when we leave school. Really, education just begins then. You know, school gives us the education on how to do things, but we still have to learn to apply it and keep applying it. Mr. Fleury continued, he says, we all need to grow and become more effective at understanding the very mind of God. We have to learn to think like God. And as Philippians 2:5 says, let this mind be in you, which is also in Christ Jesus. Now, this world doesn't understand God's thinking. You can't understand Shakespeare or God or anybody else unless you understand their thinking. And we must understand the mind of God because he is our Father. And so you can understand the mind of God if you ask him to let you understand it. And, I've proved this in my own life over the years. And, God, he's a great being. He loves all mankind. But we need to learn to think like he does. And there are certain things that people do that God would never even consider even thinking about doing. And so we have to come to that point. All right. So we need Shakespeare to help us learn to think deeply. And I am going to give a podcast, just on learning how to think deeply using Shakespeare. And we'll wait a few more podcasts for that. We have some other things we need to cover before we get to that. But I think that will be a really, really exciting podcast. Now, Mr. Fleury's next section in this article is he talks about scholarship. And, it's really important that we think about this. And he goes on to say, we encourage and praise the pursuit of perfection, but this modern world has really moved away from that. And that's really true. Shakespeare is taught less and less in today's education in favor of literature of far less value. And I just read you from the Sun Times what Mr. Fleury is talking about. There are the classes that people are offering on vampires, cyborgs, popular films, and TV. I mean, when I took my Shakespeare course at the University of Pittsburgh, it was the toughest course I ever took in my life. But I survived. I passed it, and I did get my literature degree. And I know a couple of friends of mine know that I teach Shakespeare now and that I teach English literature. And I even forget our teacher's name, but they said, oh, if she found out you're teaching Shakespeare, she'd roll over in her grave. And the thing is, you see, you can be educated. You can be more educated. And so I love, striving to be more educated all the time. I need that. But anyway, I never had to take a class on vampires, cyborgs, or popular film. Now, Mr. Fleury goes on, and this is something I just really love in this article. He says, even those who perform Shakespeare's plays often take a very scholarly approach to them, reworking them with their own interpretations and modern ideas. In almost every case, they degrade what Shakespeare did and produce trash. And I have to say that my wife and I were traveling in England, and we went to a Shakespeare play. It's called Taming of the Shrew. And, of course, there's been movies about that, and Elizabeth Taylor and I think her husband, Rock Hudson. I don't know if that was her husband or not. I better not say that. Well, I've already said it, so I can't take it back. But anyway, went to see this play, and it was a disaster. I'm not telling you where it was, but it was a disaster. I've never left a theater more disappointed in my life. And it was just, I think it was the weirdest experience I've ever had. But I experienced the trash that it's kind of like, there's the modern, there's modern scholarship, and then there's modern scholarlyism, and they're really different. And so the scholarly, it's really vastly different. And this is the way I kind of look at it is, scholarship, true scholarship is an honest search for the truth, and scholarliness is full of intellectual vanity. And whoever produced that play on Taming the Shrew, I know they brought them out and everybody else cheered, but we kind of left. So anyway, Mr. Fleury goes on to say that Christ condemned the scholarly attitude, and because it's vain, and scholarship is radically different than being scholarly. He goes on to say the Israelite cities of Chorazin and Bethsaida were full of scholarly people. And Christ said to them, woe unto you, Chorazin, and woe unto you, Bethsaida, if the mighty works which were done in you had been done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. But I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than for you. And so you say, Christ's message was absolutely thrilling and simple, and it wasn't scholarly enough for those people, and they rejected it. And Christ really, really brought them down for it. Christ continued in this. That was Matthew 11, by the way, verses 21 and 22. Now here's verses 23 and 24. It says, and you, Capernaum, which are exalted unto heaven, shall be brought down to the grave. For if the mighty works which have been done in you have been done in Sodom, it would have remained until this day. But I say unto you that it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than for you. And so here, I mean, Sodom had the most horrible sins, but if you look at what Christ is saying, is that, being a scholarly person could have more deadly sin than what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah. And so, people are going to lose their eternal life being scholarly instead of, listening to the truth. Mr. Fleury goes on to say, now contrast that attitude of those Israelites to the attitude God was truly interested in. And at that time, Jesus answered and said, I thank you, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hid these things from the wise and prudent and have revealed them unto babes. So if you're a scholarly person and God, lays the simple truth out in front of you, and if you can't hear it, that's sad. That's tragic. And so we have to make sure that we have right scholarship, but certainly not being scholarly or vain about it. And so now Mr. Fleury goes on to say, it's likely Shakespeare had some of that attitude. His phraseology was 10 times greater than any other writer's language. And so again, we want to be really, really careful of, scholarly people and their ideas, and they can just be crazy ideas, as we're learning, even as we continue to go through the COVID pandemic plandemic, I guess, and just see these scholarly people are just off their rockers, really. But one thing, Mr. Fleury goes on to say that Shakespeare really did help found British imperialism, and there's a quote here he gives from a book by Carlton Ogburn, And the book is titled The Mysterious William Shakespeare, Myth and Reality. And the thing is, for all of your listeners out there, I also will want to do maybe several podcasts on Ogburn's book. And it's really kind of a fascinating book, but it is, I mean, you're going to have to really be able to think deeply to understand that book. So we'll push that off down the line for when we all get better at our deep thinking. And I need to get my thinking deeper as well. So we're all on this together. But here's what he says. He said, in the mysterious William Shakespeare, The Myth and Reality, Carlton Ogburn quoted early 19th century Shakespearean commentator Herman Schintzelmeyer. Notice what he wrote. At a distance of four centuries, Elizabeth Tudor and William Shakespeare looked like brother and sister. He, too, had a unique receptivity. He assembled 1,000 years around the throne. To us, William's work is embedded in Elizabeth's role, and William's poetry is redolent of Elizabeth's work. He is Elizabethan poet, and she is the Shakespearean queen. The plays are Elizabethan, conquest, extensions of territory, expansion of privilege and power, additions of wealth to a nation that is experiencing a whole world. There was not room enough for him in the island of Britain. He had to roam far and wide in order to keep his genius supplied with raw material. Like Drake and Raleigh, he discovered and held as booty the material which set his imagination on fire. Between the lines and between the characters, one may read the legend, our island is too small, our kingdom is the world. Shakespeare was, in the realm of poetry, one of the founders of British imperialism. Now, imperialism is a really bad word today, and so many people are upset with British imperialism. And in fact, on December 1st, Mr. Joel Hilliker put a great article up at thetrumpet.com, and I have a little bit of it here. I could read just a little bit. We'll just kind of take a little break here from Mr. Fleury's article. But the article is about Barbados spurns Britain for China, and I don't have a lot of time to spend with this article. But again, it was put at thetrumpet.com on December 1st, and so you can go back and find this article. It says, something happened this week that most of the world overlooked. It symbolizes a dramatic shift in our world. And he's talking about Barbados has now separated itself from Britain and the Queen. It says, now the nation's first president, Sandra Mason, is its head of state, not Queen Elizabeth. In their celebrations, the leaders of Barbados have been effusive in their condemnations of Britain's colonial past. Now, there's no doubt that Britain did make mistakes, and it was corrupt leaders that did it. It wasn't, and we shouldn't just blanket the whole British Empire, because we know that the British Empire did a lot of good in this world. It brought education. It brought personal freedom and liberty. It brought wealth to poor nations. It lifted them up, gave them high culture and just a great civilization. Again, like I said, there were mistakes. But here's what's really serious about what's happening in Barbados. Barbados is trading Britain for a new power that can legitimately be called imperialist, China. And so they're trading in Britain for China. And I mean, we have to remember now, this is communist China. And there's actually enough information out there what they've done to other countries. They're giving them millions and millions of dollars. And then if they don't pay back, well, they're being punished. So Mr. Hilliker says in the middle of the article, right as these nations are turning their back on Britain, they are inviting an arguably the world's most aggressive neo-colonialist power. So it's probably not going to be long before they regret their decisions. So again, imperialism is not a bad thing, but it can do bad things if you have the wrong people in charge. And I think that's the way we need to understand that today. All right. Mr. Foy goes on now in this imperialism section. He says, Shakespeare's works testify that he believed in the expansion of the British Empire. His writings probably inspired many British leaders to see that little England was too small. They needed to expand. Now, Mr. Foy now addresses God's people. He says, God's people need that same burning passion for God's truth and empire. And one of the things that so many Christians today are not even aware of, if you study the book of the prophet Daniel, we know that God is going to establish the fifth empire on this earth. You know, there's the great four. And, of course, the Roman Empire was the fourth. And then out of them came the Holy Roman Empire, and the Holy Roman Empire is rising again. But it says that when Christ returns, he's coming to sit on David's throne, and he's going to establish the fifth and final empire. And so this whole world is going to be run by God's empire. And that's coming. And but you don't hear that taught, you know, in Christian churches today. But that is the essence of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's what he taught. And, of course, that's why they crucified him and killed him. And we know that Christ is coming back, and he's going to be coming back very soon. Mr. Fleury goes on to say, talking about all of us, he says, are we confined to Evan, Oklahoma, or even to the United States, or to any other country we might live in? No, even Britain and America are too small for what God has planned for us. God called us in order to reach the world. We are going to be imperialists, educating the world in God's way of life. Every human being is a potential member of the God family. And so, you know, when Christ returns and the saints are resurrected, and those of us still living are made immortal, we are going to help Christ establish the fifth empire. And it's going to be an empire of great education, great peace, and the world is going to become a utopia. And it's going to be just fantastic. Mr. Foy goes on to say, if we get wrapped up in our little world, we're going to be left standing by the wayside. God's plan is about the whole world, even the whole universe and the whole family of God. God isn't planning to use us in a small endeavor. He wants and he expects great things of his people. We need to capture this vision and let it set our imagination on fire. And that's certainly what Shakespeare did. His imagination was on fire. Even in his tribute, it says Johnson called Shakespeare both the soul of the age and Britain's triumph. It was like calling Shakespeare the spirit behind the British Empire. God needed a real, vibrant spirit to lift it up into becoming a mighty empire. Shakespeare played a role in raising the empire spirit to achieve that greatness, and he stirred Britain's imaginations. Many of the plays that Shakespeare wrote were based on the lives of England's kings, and we're going to be covering a lot of those plays in this podcast. And we're going to be also, it says that Ogburn believes that Shakespeare had an opportunity to travel to a lot of different places, and he really learned things. We're going to talk about Hamlet. We're going to talk about Othello. We're even going to be using the play Julius Caesar. And, all those things have lessons for us. Mr. Fleury goes on and says, the whole world was looking to the theater where Shakespeare's plays were performed. As reported by A.L. Rouse in Ogburn's book, by 1600, foreign visitors regarded the London theater as the chief glory of the nation. And I've done some research on my own, and it wasn't just the intellectuals that went to Shakespeare's plays, but it was the everyday people. And in fact, those theaters were so full all the time that it made some of the religious people really upset, because the theaters were open on Sunday. And a lot of people, well, they skipped church and went to the theater. And where were they getting the better education? To be honest, they were getting it with Shakespeare and his plays. And so you can see that the people were being educated not only in situations and lessons about leadership, lessons about how to live your life, but they were being taught language. They were being taught how to speak the beautiful English language. And so they just flocked to the theaters. And in fact, the religious people wanted to close them down for a while. And they weren't able to do it. At least if they did it, they weren't able to do it for very long. By 1600, foreign visitors regarded the London Theatre as the chief glory of the nation. Now, Mr. Fleury says the chief glory should have been David's throne, and Shakespeare should have written a lot more about that. But the carnal mind is not really going to discuss that throne the way God insists that we do as his family. Now, Shakespeare wrote in one of his sonnets,
"Your monument shall be my gentle verse, which eyes not yet created shall overread."
Shakespeare understood that what he wrote could outlive him. He knew that as God created more eyes, more people would see his plays. Surely he realized that it was impossible for an audience to pick up on everything he wrote. The plays might help drive the lesson home, but when you get into the depth of Shakespeare, you realize you need to slow down and meditate in order to understand the meaning. His plays need to be read to be understood. And on the podcast, we will be reading plays. And I'll be bringing in some other books as well to help you do that. Now, Mr. Fleury goes on and says, God gave the British both the throne of David, and that is talked about and proved to you by Mr. Herbert Armstrong's book on Britain and United States in prophecy. And that's available to you free on the trumpet.com. And so everybody needs to read that book. It's been one of the most, we've given out more copies of that book than we have any other one. And so I think it's over 6 million copies. I could be wrong about that. It could be more than that. But anyway, we know that the British throne was the throne of David at one time. And things have changed on that. And I'll explain that here in just a few minutes. But Mr. Fleury goes on to say, God gave the British both the throne of David and the birthright. And that goes all the way back to the book of Genesis, for you to understand that. And that's all discussed in the United States and Britain in prophecy. The birthright to receive the blessing of Abraham, but God wanted them to spread the word. He wanted them to learn to speak and write about that throne. He wanted them to promote the lamp of David through writing and speaking to be a witness of it. God also wanted them to have the depth of education and thinking to rule the great British Empire that he was giving them. And, I'll just have to skip ahead here a little bit, but I can just paraphrase this a little bit. The British really didn't know they had the throne of David. And, things have changed, pretty drastically now. If you look at Britain, I mean, it's really just going down into a lot of degeneration. But Mr. Fleury goes on to say, regardless of Britain's feeble state, however, God's promise about David's throne continues to be fulfilled. And, you can read about the new throne of David now in Mr. Fleury's newest books is titled The New Throne of David. And again, you can get that at thetrumpet.com, and it's free to you. And there's no follow-up. No one is going to call you if you write in or call in or just download that book for yourself. And, Jesus Christ, it says right in the Gospel of Luke, that when he returns, God the Father is going to give to him the throne of his father David. And so that throne is to be an eternal throne. And God made those promises very early in the Bible, in the books of Samuel. You can read that for yourself. And Mr. Fleury says, look, we need to be deep thinkers to explain and teach about that eternal throne. And so, he's speaking to a lot of God's people. And certainly he's speaking to me as well. He goes on to talk about the prophet Jeremiah. He says, in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 33, 15 through 16, it prophesies of how the whole world will be united through the throne of David. And there is going to be one government. When Christ returns, there's going to be one government, and it's going to be one world, and we're all going to be united, but it's going to be united under that throne of David. And, that's really, really exciting. And William Shakespeare was right with someone sitting on David's throne, Queen Elizabeth. And he was right there with her, spent a lot of time in that environment, and who knows what he really knew. All right. So if you study that book of Jeremiah, and again, you can even get our booklet on that, verses 17 and 18 discuss two covenants. There's always going to be a man sitting on David's throne, or I should say a man or a queen. And there's also going to be a group of people who support a man that delivers a message about that throne. And Mr. Armstrong delivered the message about that throne, and Mr. Joel Fleury is delivering a message about that throne. And so it's the thing is, will people listen? And sometimes it gets a little discouraging because people don't want to listen. And that's because they don't want to change their lives. But this world needs unity. Certainly America needs unity. I think Britain also feels the same way. Judah needs the same thing. And it is David's throne that's going to unify this world. It's going to unify all of us. And so, there's so many scriptures we can give you. Isaiah 9:7, Luke 1, verses 30 through 33 say that Jesus Christ is going to sit on that throne forever. And so we really do have a wonderful message. And as Mr. Fleury says here in this article, that the British Empire is going to be great and it's going to live again, but it's going to be a lot different than it is today. And so again, this article, if you just write to pcg.church and ask for the article, Shakespeare and the British Empire, you can read this article for yourself. All right. Some other things Mr. Fleury talks about here, and I have to watch my time so I can tell you how you can really participate in this podcast. But Shakespeare definitely helped Lincoln, and this is pretty well established even in the let's say the college and university world. There's biographies about Lincoln that talk about this. But Shakespeare was obviously one of Abraham Lincoln's favorite poets. This is his own private secretary wrote this. It says, Lincoln employed his leisure hours, which he did not altogether lack, by saturating himself in Shakespeare in the King James Bible, wrote John Hay, Lincoln's private secretary. According to Hay, Lincoln read Shakespeare more than all other writers together. Hay mentioned how he loved Hamlet, Macbeth, and Richard II. On one occasion, Hay wrote, I went with him to the soldier's home, and he read Shakespeare to me, the end of Henry V and the beginning of Richard III, till my heavy eyelids caught his considerate notice, and he sent me to bed. So if you wanted to go out with Abraham Lincoln, he was going to read Shakespeare to you. And so that was his night. That was his way of spending a relaxing evening. He said, out on the circuit in his law practice, Lincoln would carry Shakespeare's plays in his pocket, and when he had a few moments, he would read them. Through this, Lincoln received a tremendous education despite almost no formal scholarly training. It is possible that Lincoln's mind being so saturated in Shakespeare's works was a factor in the North winning the Civil War. And that's really an astounding statement, but it's a true statement. He goes on to say, you can see why he loved Richard II when you consider his experience in that war. Suffering one crisis after another, he had to wonder, where is this all going to end? Why must we suffer like this? In one of his favorite soliloquies from the play, King Richard states,
no matter where, of comfort no man speak. Let's talk of graves, of worms, and epitaphs. Make dust our paper, and with rainy eyes write sorrow on the bosom of the earth. Let's choose executors and talk of wills, and yet not so, for what can we bequeath, save our deposed bodies to the ground? Our lands, our lives, and all are Bolingbrokes, and nothing can we call our own but death, and that small model of the barren earth which serves as paste and cover to our bones.
Now, doesn't it remind you of this world in a powerful way? Now the king continues.
Let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the death of kings.
Again, quoting Mr. Fleury, Shakespeare had his mind on the kings, on David's throne in the past, and the kings at the present.
How some have been deposed, some slain in war, some haunted by the ghosts they have deposed, some poisoned by their wives, some sleeping killed, all murdered, for within the hollow crown that rounds the mortal temples of a king, keeps death his court.
Now, what a history of kings. Read it in the history books. Read it in your Bible. On David's throne, all kinds of things like that happened. The soliloquy from Richard II ends with this passage.
For you have but mistook me all this while. I live with bread like you, feel want, taste grief, need friends. Subjected thus, how can you say to me, I am a king?
Now, Mr. Fleury continues, Shakespeare understood the ebb and flow of human history. The earthly throne the king sat on did not keep him from the feeling of every man. However, that will be different when we sit on the throne of David. Nothing is going to happen to you that God doesn't approve. You literally are kings preparing to sit on a throne and finally change how the kings of David's house have acted throughout history. So the Bible is really clear. The two Christians attain to the kingdom of God are going to be kings and priests forever. They're going to wear a double crown. And so it shouldn't scare people when we say that, you know, two Christians, when they're resurrected, are going to be kings. Mr. Fleury goes on to say that Richard II expounds on those themes, and we are going to be reading the play Richard II. It happens to be one of my favorite plays, and I think it's probably one play that's so instructive on how to be a king and how not to be a king. And so Richard II really went through a lot of turmoil in his life. It says, Shakespeare understood history as what it was, a constant repetition of the same sins over and again. That is why Shakespeare wrote quite a bit about repentance. People have to repent in order to change the course of history, or else we'll just keep repeating the sad results. Lincoln believed Shakespeare addressed such universal themes that, in a sense, he predicted the future. Shakespeare definitely understood human nature like practically no other secular writer. And Lincoln believed that on his words will the leading minds of the world always be nourished. Now, that's what Lincoln thought. It says he also believed that Shakespeare's plays, more than any other writings, brought hope to the common people. Now, Mr. Fleury goes on to say, Lincoln is further quoted as saying, if all other books were destroyed excepting the Bible and Shakespeare, the world would still have the best literature preserved. Shakespeare's mind was like a sea to which all others in the world were as tributaries. And why should we not drink from this inexhaustible fountain? And so that's from a book by David J. Harkness and R. Gerald McMurtry titled Lincoln's Favorite Poets. Now, and Mr. Fleury just ends this section on Lincoln. He says, in some cases, Shakespeare is quite negative, and Lincoln was melancholy to a serious degree. Maybe he got too much into some of Shakespeare's depressing plays. Human beings can never quite get the balance, but still there are lessons to learn if we study them with a discerning mind. And so there is a great book about about Lincoln and his depression, and I've read that book. And Shakespeare does have, you know, some depressing plays, but if you don't get caught up in them, but read them for the lessons. They still can teach many good lessons. You can get on the internet. There's a great internet site called Lincoln Collection, and it talks about Lincoln and Shakespeare. And one of the funniest things I think on there is Shakespeare. I mean, Lincoln loved to go to Shakespeare plays, and one of his favorites was King Lear. And one of the actors, he went to see the play in Washington, D.C. He went to the Ford's Theater, and he didn't necessarily like how the actor was acting, and he actually, I think, advised him on how, you know, he changed King Lear. he changed the performance of it, and I guess he was talking to people during the play saying, well, this has changed, that's changed. And so you can see that Lincoln really did know his plays. And I think there was another time where he told another actor how he should have said a soliloquy. And so, that's pretty amazing. So it's just not by coincidence that that we're talking about how Shakespeare helped Lincoln. All right, Churchill and Shakespeare is the next quote. And, Mr. Fleury writes here, he says, Winston S. Churchill, a firm believer in the greatness of the British Empire, also studied Shakespeare at great length. In A History of the English-Speaking Peoples, Churchill concludes his chapter on the defeat of the Spanish Armada with Shakespeare's words from King John.
Come the three corners of the world in arms, and we shall shock them. Nought shall make us rue, if England to itself do rest but true.
In other words, if England kept true to her principles, she would have a powerful British Empire. The same is true in God's church. If we are true to God and what we know is right, we're going to have a powerful church. Mr. Foy goes on, says, look at Britain today, and it's clear that its thinking is far from those words of King John. Scotland's recent push to declare independence is just one example proving that the empire didn't follow Shakespeare's advice. And again, remember now, this article was published in 2017, and Scotland and they wanted to secede from the kingdom, and they're back in, but they're still wanting to do that. So I'll just skip down here a little bit. Churchill often lamented about the little Englanders who lacked vision. They didn't see the purpose of the empire and what good it could do. They were selfish and small-minded. The same mind exists in Britain today, but a lot worse. However, God has raised up this work to refute that small-minded thinking and to send a powerful message to the British Isles. In Julius Caesar, Shakespeare wrote,
there is a tide in the affairs of men, which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their life is bound in shallows and in miseries. On such a full sea we are now afloat, and we must take the current when it serves or lose our ventures.
Now, Mr. Foy goes on to say, Lincoln applied this quotation to his own career many times and found a great truth in it. There is a tide in the affairs of this church, a spiritual tide, and if it is taken to the flood, it will lead you into marvelous and wonderful and dazzling rewards from God. There are no greater opportunities on earth right now than in this church. Jesus Christ is about to return, and we're going to introduce him to the world. The high tide of mankind's rule is upon us, and change is coming. We need to take it at the flood and move with power to take advantage of every opportunity God offers us. If we do, we will experience some of the most dazzling and indescribable rewards ever given to man. And so that's the end of his article. Now, there's a lot more he could have said about Churchill. And again, you can get online, and there's a great article up there that you could read that says, how much did Churchill owe to Shakespeare? And I'll just read you just one part of a paragraph. I think I have enough time that I can do this. But article was published in December 14, 2018. This is at the same time, just really about a year after Mr. Fleury published his about, you know, how important Shakespeare is. But again, the title is, how much did Churchill owe to Shakespeare? And this is the first paragraph. It said, did Shakespeare win the war? He was certainly Churchill's greatest literary ally in 1940 when he sent the English language into battle. In fact, it comes as a surprise to realize at a fascinating exhibition in Washington, D.C.'s magnificent Folger Library, just how much Churchill saw England and its history through the eyes of Shakespeare. For a period in 1940, he became the lion-hearted Henry V, albeit Henry V with a cigar and dressed in a velvet one side. we are going to be covering Henry V, too, by the way. It says, when the Second World War came, Churchill, in full warlord mode, adopted an intensely emotional style of speechmaking, one that was Shakespearean without being called Shakespeare. He even had his speeches typed out as if they were in verse. And the young Battle of Britain pilots he called the few, an echo of the St. Crispin's Day speech in Henry V. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. This was a favorite throughout the war. Laurence Olivier delivered Henry's speech on the radio to boost morale, and Churchill found it so inspiring that he asked him to produce the play as a film in 1944. Shakespeare cast back then were littered with combatants. Fluellen, of course, was played by Esmond Knight, an actor who had been blinded by a shot from the Bismarck. And so there is a lot that you can look up on the internet about how Shakespeare helped these two men. Again, it's a great article by Mr. Fleury, but it's also, I think it should be great inspiration for all of you out there listening to these first couple of podcasts to want to really be a part of it. And I am just really excited, and I'm honored to be able to have a podcast like this where I can help you, learn and learn more about Shakespeare, but also learn how to think deeply and how to really enjoy reading hard things. I mean, sometimes the harder things you read are the best for your mind, and it really gets your mind working. And it's just time we watch a lot less television, and begin to really feed our minds. So, what do you need to know to participate? Let's say with this podcast. And I want you to realize it's going to be very active for you, and you're probably going to have to make some sacrifices to really participate in it. But here's my plans: is there will be 2 new podcasts created every month. The first podcast for this series, or for the Royal Education, Shakespeare's Royal Education, the first one was December 1st. The second podcast will air on December 15th. Now, you'll be able to listen to the first podcast for 2 weeks, and you'll be able to listen to it anytime. But then for the next 2 weeks, you'll be hearing the next podcast. So there'll be 2 podcasts a month. And the reason why I have to do it that way for all your listeners, I still have responsibility for Just the Best Literature. And we actually are having a new series starting on that. And that new series, I can tell you, on the Shakespeare podcast is going to be called Read Like Winston Churchill. And so we're going to be reading some of Winston Churchill's best writings and some of his favorite books that he liked to read. And we're even going to put some young reader, we're going to read Treasure Island for young readers, because that was really one of his favorite books. Now, also to participate, I want you to get connected. If you have a Twitter account, I will have a Twitter page, and it's called Shakespeare's Royal Education. And that way I'll be able to give you announcements and give you extra quotes and maybe even answer questions if you have certain questions for me. So again, the Twitter account, you just have to search for the title, and you get on Twitter, and it's Shakespeare's Royal Education. And there is no apostrophe S there. So if you put an apostrophe in there, it's going to bounce you. You're not going to be able to find it. All right. The other thing you need to do is you need to buy the first 3 plays. And what I like to use is I really like to use Penguin. Pelican series. Sorry. It's almost the same bird. Anyway, it's the Pelican series, not the Penguin series. So you get the Pelican series. It's King Lear, Julius Caesar, King John. Now, I recommend you buy these at abebooks.com. And the reason is you can find very fine copies of these, and it's going to be really worth your while financially. And the reason I like that series is they really have a great definitions to the words that Shakespeare uses. And so they're at the very bottom of the page. So, when you read a play, you're going to run into words that you don't know. And, of course, I'll be discussing a lot of that, on the podcast. But there's a definition down there. Also, Shakespeare uses unusual phrases sometimes, and they'll explain the whole phrase. And so it's right there on the bottom of the page for you. Now, if you can't find the series, you can also really just get any. There's the Folger series out there. Those are a lot more expensive. A lot of people like to use those, but the Folger series is more for professional actors that are going to be acting in one of the Shakespeare plays. And so again, the books I'm asking you to get at abebooks.com I think will be great. Now, if you can find the whole volume of the Pelican series. And it's a big book. it'd be worthwhile for you to have. And I think if you looked at abebooks.com for that, you could really find a good copy of it. Well, that's about all the time I have for today's program. Now, on our next program, I will begin our discussion on William Shakespeare's King Lear. And we'll get into the history and we'll get into the characters and things like that. Now, you can buy good used copies of Shakespeare's plays at abebooks.com. You may also be able to find copies in your local bookstore. The Pelican series might be a little difficult to find in a bookstore. Now, of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to comments@kpcg.fm. And please join me next time as we advance our royal education.
You've been listening to Shakespeare's Royal Education on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.